Okay, dear Dhammer friends, we are going to start the second question and answer session. So our good friend Chandrika has come to present the questions. So we'll start the session with written questions.
We have five questions today, Bhante.
Yeah.
Number one, most venerable Bhante, I sit down for meditation and listen to the sounds. Within few seconds, I can see the breath. After few minutes, it disappears and my body is moving. Most of the time, upper part of my body move to the front. Sometimes, thoughts come as a picture. I was there with awareness. Then, thoughts come one after the other and I even can't identify those. Those are not interrelated. It's totally random and the second thought comes before the end of the first thought. I feel like sleepy, but I am sure I was awake. Suddenly, automatically, shake my head and that moment, there is not any thoughts. At that time, there is a brightness. This is happening again and again. But after some time, I feel boring and I can't stay a long time. If I see the body and identify a body sensation, I can stay further. But I experience when I wake up from meditation, with the previous experience, it is more relaxed and that status is there sometime after the meditation even. Day-to-day life, I have experienced when others get angry, I can stay with them without getting angry, which I can't do before. I was able to realize when I feel angry and because of that, it was gone by itself most of the time. But when I feel happy, I get attached to it and lose mindfulness. Theruvan Saranai.
Yeah, I think some similar question was there yesterday. So when there are some unwholesome states, so you recognize it. So that mere recognition helps to overcome them, to get rid of them, or they simply disappear. But on the other hand, when there are some favorable, wholesome states are there in the mind, sometimes we promote them so that those typically remain in the mind. So, but when you come to Satipatthana, so we are keeping both sides on the similar non-judgmental level. So either kusala or either akusala, wholesome or unwholesome, we are treating them very equally. Assume that you have some lustful thought, angry thought, or you have some renunciant thought, or loving kindness thought. They are merely thoughts. That's it. So they are merely thoughts. So you are recognizing them as thoughts so that thinking basically going to disappear. So it is not that we are trying to think the best thoughts in the world. So typically the approach is we are promoting wholesomeness, wholesome thoughts more and more and trying to get rid of the unwholesome thoughts. So that is the typical understanding we have. But when you come to Chittanupassana, so Buddha take a kind of a different direction or kind of a radical direction where either wholesome or unwholesome, you are putting them on the same stage, same level. They are conditioned phenomena. Either wholesome or unwholesome, both are conditioned phenomena. So none of them can be considered as a kind of a refuge. So you are more... So you are more in a different domain where you are not attached to wholesomeness, nor you are attached to unwholesomeness. You are not trying to promote wholesome or unwholesome, but rather you are more taking a refuge in mindfulness. So as you have mentioned, sometimes a kind of absence of thoughts also can happen and you just be with that. That appear like boredom. So that is the issue. So then here also, who the yogi has mentioned, so you sometimes feel boredom. There are no activities in the mind. So there are no excitement, no lust, no greed, no hatred, no delusion. Just like allatura. Just pure bread. No butter, no cheese, no lunumiris, nothing is there. Just pure bread. Even today, bread is very expensive. So you got to appreciate that. At least I have bread. So you got to live with the bread, not asking any butter, not asking any jam, not asking any other whatever it is. So just try to be with pure bread. So it's very much like that. So as you come to Chittanupassana and Dhammanupassana, so you may come across this kind of a very natural awareness. Doesn't have any kind of a taste. Isn't it? Bored, monotony. So that's why we want to think, okay, what am I going to do next? What shall I do next? So that kind of a request coming from the mind, because it can't stay like that. It don't want to stay like that. It always want to attach it some excitement. Always want to go up and down. So we like to be in the up and down. You know, say for example, assume that some problem has happened and it is troubling you. Do you like to think about it, or don't you like to think about it? You like to think about it, isn't it? I mean, even you don't want to, still mind like to think about it, regretting and maybe blaming the other person and, you know, this and that. So we like to involve with that. We don't want to quickly forget it and keep the mind empty. So that is, which one is more beneficial? So we can logically understand, so things have happened, it has happened, it's done. Now I have no further things to do. But why am I again and again regretting about it, worrying about it? On the other hand, if there is something good happen, so again and again, still you are thinking, admiring, enjoying, imagining. So that is also there. So these both extremes are preferred by the mind. So how about being in the middle? Middle is we consider as bored, boring. So for that, we need to train the mind. So that is where I am again and again sort of emphasizing. So this non-thinking, just calming down, inner silence, don't consider it as a kind of a dull state. Don't consider it as a kind of a passive state. It's a very rich state. It's an unagitated state. It's a very wise state, because you are not doing any formations. Ignorance conditions formations, as we discussed last time. So if your mind is full-fledged with wisdom, it does not promote unnecessary thinking. It should not. It may understand the suffering involved with unnecessary thinking. It's a kind of a burden to the mind. It's a little kind of a tiresome to the mind. But how about just enjoying the inner peace, inner silence? So unless you familiarize with it, we actually can't even appreciate it. Because we are used to do something. We are used to react. We are used to excitement. We are used to worrying. We are used to regret. All these conditioned phenomena is what we so far associated. Now you are recognizing an entirely different thing. For that, still mind is not ready. But here in Buddha's teaching, having faith on the Buddha, now you need to promote that. You need to give some emphasis to that. Once you reach there, you need to cultivate that. Be with that. Then slowly, there's a kind of a domain shift happen. So that's a thing. So unless we do that, this domain shift may not happen. Because we are always in the excitement side, always in the formation side, sankhara side. So never being in the calming down side. Never lived in the calming down side. Now we are trying to live in the calming down side. Non-proliferation side. Emptiness. Just dwell in the emptiness. So more you are dwelling in the emptiness, then assume one day, so this side becomes stronger. This becomes your norm. Then you may, probably, you may understand, okay, where was I? I was in a hell. I was in a really dream. I was in a really suffering state. Unknowingly, I have sort of supported suffering. Now only I am in a peaceful state. So in order to have that understanding to the mind by itself, having that understanding, so you need to promote that non-proliferation. You need to promote that non-formations. Stop constructions. Stop preparations. Stop agitations. Stop doing. But promote just being. Just experiencing. Calming, cooling. Actually, we need to do it practically. I mean, I'm just trying to convince you, but you yourself have to live there. You need to be there. Experience that. Then only one day you may understand, okay, yes, that is true. I have been in a wrong side, unknowingly due to my ignorance. Now I understood a different domain, different side, different way of living. So that is why, I mean, so Buddha's teaching help us to shift our lives to this side. So the knowing side, not talking side, not reacting side, or not being emotional, rather just experiencing without a person. Even without a person, I mean without I. So I mean fairly deep in that sense. So without making an I, you are continuing your experience, you are continuing your life. Very interesting. Yeah, you have anything? Yeah. Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Yes, Bhante, I can, after experience that situation,
yeah.
The sitting meditation time was reduced.
Yeah. But you can keep it close and you can little increase the volume. No, increase the volume. Yeah. He's coming. He may know that. There's a slider. You can increase the slider. Okay, you can try.
Yeah. After experience this sitting meditation, time is reduced.
Time is reduced for which
before,
time?
Yeah, before I normally did around 1 hour, 50 minutes to 1 hour sitting.
Right.
But after this, I can't stay 1 hour.
Yes. Fine. You can't sit 1 hour. Can I rephrase it like that? Okay.
Is that
doesn't matter. I mean, thing is, now you need to understand, say in sitting. So you are doing something like this, right? You are close your eyes, you keep your body straight. So some kind of doing is there, isn't it? No, I mean, as you move forward, probably you may understand. Now just keep in the mind without establishing any place. This is one way of living. Another thing is, in order to do that, do you need to have a kind of a fixed posture? What do you think? Just to keep the mind empty, is it compulsory to have a fixed posture? No need, no? I mean, even though you are sitting short time, but during the other activities, say you are walking. While walking also, if you are able to keep your mind free, keep your mind unestablished, empty, then you are doing your task. You are doing the cultivation of the mind. So therefore, sitting time probably you can, I mean, even reduce. And you need to observe whether mind is getting kind of fixed, getting kind of stressed, tensed while sitting. Because, you know, samadhi, concentration, different types of concentrations are there. Now say, for example, if I am looking at this again and again, I can concentrate on this, isn't it? I can concentrate on this. I can completely forget about everything else. Okay, now mind is fixed with this. I can forget about this and just keep the mind empty. Which one is good? Second one. Okay, so that means while sitting, if our mind gets fixed with something, so as the yogi progresses in vipassana, so he need to understand, comparatively, this is kind of stressful, kind of tensed, when compared with completely letting it go and keep the mind empty. Comparatively, you may understand that. Then you promote that emptiness rather than just sit cross-legged, have a very rigid posture and fixing your mind onto one object. So that is samatha approach, and you understand its disadvantages. And then you rather let it go and just keep the mind very naturally empty. If that is possible, that is more useful, more fruitful in that way. So it is more natural awareness, kind of a very natural, relaxed awareness. Mind is not established anywhere. So that is more fruitful. So if you comparatively see, okay, now I am doing that more rather than staying longer hours in sitting, no harm. Yeah. I think you got the point. Yeah, okay. That they don't summer.
Most Venerable Bhante, when I am doing Anapanasati, I feel as if my consciousness, within brackets she says, which seems to be very subtle and fine at such times, settles between my eyebrows. Not inside, not necessarily on the skin, somewhere in between of sorts. I continue to observe this sensation, and usually by this time, the breathing thins out as well. Is this normal, Bhante?
No, I didn't get the question.
Okay, she just says, yeah. I'm doing, when I feel as if my consciousness settles between my eyebrows.
Uh-huh.
At that time, she says, it's very subtle and fine at such times.
Mm-hmm.
When that happens okay. Only, it
happens. Okay. Yeah. So very much like your mind get concentrated at your closer to the forehead. So so you feel that comfortable, right?
Somewhere in between your thoughts. I continue to observe the sensitivity and usually by that time breathing thins out as well.
Fine.
So is this normal?
If you are able to observe whatever the sensations available at that place, no harm. Only thing is you need to carefully handle it. Because you know, the place that you have selected is a very troublesome place, by the way. If you put too much effort, a little bit of drowsiness, rotation type of experience, maybe a headache can happen. But if you are carefully handling it, you can make use of the concentration as well. Typically, if you are taking kind of a place which is below your neck, that is more easy. I don't know who has written the question. Is it yours? Okay. So, are you feeling any kind of trouble here, or you are quite comfortable and you can observe whatever the sensations going on?
I can observe the sensations, Bhante, but only thing is like, it's like the consciousness sort of like moves out of the body, like, I don't know how to explain, put into words.
No, it doesn't go out.
it's like a third party is viewing the body, like the body is kind of like a shell.
Exactly. So that is one result of Satipatthana, where you allow the body as a separate phenomena and your observation as a separate process. So there's a bodily process is there, physical process is there. The observing mental process is another process. So you have a kind of a separate distinction between those two. No problem. You can continue. So now you are watching the body, different sensations available in the body as someone else's sensations. Is that what you are telling?
Like, I don't identify that as me per se. Like,
no problem. Yeah, no me. just experience is there, different sensations are there, feelings are there, that's all. So, I mean, you don't need to attribute a me there, I there. But you are continuing the observation. Different bodily processes, phenomena are there and you are continuing the observation. Continue and see. Yeah. Yes. Actually, there is no such teaching available in the Buddha's teaching as Manokaya. So, point is, as we continue our meditation, sometimes we might perceive like, my mind has gone some very far place. My body is here. I am watching from that far place about this little body Oh, the mind has gone very far place. Body also has expanded. I am watching this large body while being outside. So likewise, these different perceptions can happen. And you don't need to interpret as that this is a manokaya and this is another person. So those are unnecessarily, we are giving more emphasis to that. Rather, you know, Buddha has discussed atitanagata pachuppanna, heena panita, then olarika sukuma, ajjatta bahidda. So likewise, different experiences are possible. Say sometimes you feel like, assume that you are doing anapanasati. So breath happens at the nostril, so you are feeling it. And very much like your attention is closer to the nostril, each and every in-breath and out-breath, you are observing it, no problem. Some other times, okay, you have gone a little bit far. While being in the far place, you are observing still the breathing. Maybe your direction, the position of that observing point, say vantage point, has changed. Sometimes, okay, breathing has become very subtle. You feel like you are in a very far place, and this very subtle breath you are experiencing. So likewise, so different ways that we may perceive the experience. So all these change, by the way. So you don't need to give a lot of kind of unnecessary importance to these perceptions. Rather, these are subject to change. Maybe on tomorrow you may feel like, okay, this thing happened, but very much like again you are closer to it and observing it, not from far, but again you have come back. So therefore, in the Buddha's teaching, there is no such teaching as manokaya and all sorts of things. Rather, the perception has changed from observing while being closer to the phenomena or while being far from the phenomena. Yes. I mean, some actually interpret it as manokaya and this and that. But I mean, this, I feel it's complicate the situation. It's better just be with the Buddha's teaching, the very original Sutta teachings, where Buddha interprets this as either using ajjata bahidda, that means you are feeling it like internally, or you feel like externally. You feel like closer, or you feel like far. And you feel like gross, or you feel like soft. So likewise, different perceptions can happen, but anyway, all these are changing.
Technically, when should one consume milk tea if they have observed 8 precepts?
Before 12 noon.
Milk tea?
Milk.
Milk tea.
Yes.
Before 12 noon?
Yeah. Because milk is considered as food. So therefore, so now milk and say even the large fruits, even king coconut, even those are considered as food.
Bante, I think, I don't know, I think this person thinks in the morning, because here we don't take milk tea before the sunrise, something like that.
Maybe
that she's referring to.
Because, you know, according to the precepts, so we are dividing the time in differently. Say, from dawn time to noon, so we have the kala. That's called kala, the proper time. From noon time to dawn, that is we call as vikala. So when you are accepting, observing that vikala bhojana sikkhapada, is that vikala bhojana veramani sikkhapadan samadhyami. So that means you admit, okay, I am not taking food during the vikala. Vikala bhojana veramani. So that means from 12 noon to next day dawn, you are not taking any food. After dawn time till noon is the kala, there you are allowed to take the food. So milk is coming under food. Yeah, so that is actually a kind of a controversial point where, you can simply You no need to go for any kind of very, say, complicated mathematics. Rather, some practical points Buddha has highlighted for the monks, for example. Say, during the dawn, if it is dawn time, you can quickly, easily you can look at the palm. The lines available in your palm, those are visible easily. If that means now the dawn time has come, I mean it has already arisen. So that is one easy thing. So otherwise nowadays actually we are having a chart, a dawn time indicator, where exactly they measure it and indicate it, okay, on this time, on this particular date, what is the dawn time, what is the noon time. So likewise they have indicated, so you can follow that. It's also there. So whatever is convenient is all right. From place to place. Yes, yes. Exactly. He's the one prepared the chart, did the calculations, and accordingly he prepared the chart. So that is what mostly we are also following. So dawn time and the noon time, everything is mentioned there. So during the whole year, it is mentioned. Yeah. Right. Right. Yeah.
Okay. Question number 3. Theruvan Saranai. Dear Reverend Sir, we are so grateful to you for your efforts to enlighten us on various Dhamma matters. I am confused on some explanation containing in a Dhamma explanation book by a learned Reverend Hempita Gedara Jnanasiha Thero on Panchaskanda. In that, he shows Upadana is only an object and the Pancha Upadana Skanda is the cause for attachment, which I can understand. However, in dependent origination, in nowhere it is shown as the cause other than Upadana. Kindly get me out of this mess.
What's the last statement?
However, in dependent origination, in nowhere it is shown as the cause other than Upadana.
Cause. No, I'm trying to figure out what's the question. May I know who has written the question? Yeah. No Upadana. Yes, yes. Close to you. No. You can pass the this thing, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Now, in the
book,
Patijasampada, now Upadana is the cause,
mm-hmm.
not the cause, I mean that in the Upadana Patya Bhava.
But Upadana also has a cause.
Yes. The Four Noble Truths, it's in that sense, cause for suffering is,
Tanha.
Yeah.
Samudaya, Dukkha Samudaya.
That's it, yeah. So, now, in that book, which I have understood as, that, Upadana is, object, it is not the cause, but, Pancha Upadana Skanda is the reason for that. That's what I understood. I can point and show the point later on.
It seems a kind of a confusion. So basically, now aggregates are there. Khandas are there. Aggregates are there. But unknowingly, we can have an attachment to that. So that causes suffering. So if there is no attachment, aggregates are merely aggregates. So there is no suffering then. assume that there are feelings. But if you attach to the feeling, it can cause suffering. But if there is no attachment, if there is kind of detachment, if there is letting go, then how suffering is possible? So basically, so we are very much like, we are not accumulating upadana skandha, we are rather dismantling very much like. We are allowing them to fade away. More and more upadana becomes less and less, it becomes weaker and weaker. Instead of attachment, we are training detachment, kind of a separate observation, being little separate from the khandhas. So in that sense, so basically they becomes merely sankhara. They become shuddha sankhara. Sometimes they refer to as shuddha sankhara. Just pure aggregates, that's all. But we are not attached to them. So they have their own causes and conditions. Accordingly, they come and go. We are not bothered. We accept, I mean, they have the impermanent nature. And we are not going to attach with them. We are not going to grasp them. Then can't have any suffering. And on the other hand, we need to understand there is another Tithayatana Sutta. There Buddha mentioned the cause of suffering as the Patisamuppada. The whole, the Samudaya side. Avijja Paccaya Sankhara, Sankhara Paccaya Vijnana, Vijnana Paccaya Namarupa. So likewise it builds and ultimately the end result is suffering. So this is the Dukkha Samudaya. So Patisamuppada also referred as Dukkha Samudaya, as the cause of suffering. So that the Samudaya side is referred as the Dukkha Samudaya. And then the other opposite side, Avijjayatyeva Asesa Viraga Nirodho, Sankara Nirodha, Sankara Nirodho, Vinyana Nirodha, Vinyana Nirodho, Nama Rupa Nirodha, Nama Rupa Nirodho, Salayatana Nirodha. So likewise the cessation side is the Dukkha Nirodha. So likewise, I mean, more and more you understand the Patisamuppada, so you are not promoting the Samudaya side. You are not promoting the attachment side. So in that sense, you may experience little suffering, less and less suffering. And in one day, assume that fair amount of wisdom has developed and now we are not promoting the Samudaya side at all. Instead, we have developed the cessation side. Now things have stopped. Dukkha Samudaya has let go of. Then one may be in the experience of cessation. Nirodha Satya.
Pancha Upadana Skanda and the
Upadana.
Upadana. Is there a similarity in it?
We can say like this. So, the object of upadana is the aggregate. Aggregates are there, upadana is there. So, then when these two come together, then we can call it as pancha upadana skandha. So, you can have a kind of a separation. So upadana, the khandha inherently don't have any attachment. Khandha inherently don't have any upadana. But when we are ignorantly reacting with it, then we have, the mind have kind of an attachment, kind of an upadana. So we have to tame the mind, tame the upadana. Ultimately, we break upadana. So there is no attachment, no upadana, no clinging, no tanha, no craving. Then the system may flow without clinging. We can think like that. Don't think. Thinking makes you more confused. Try to experience. Yeah.
Report number 4. Most Venerable Bhante, I have been a vegetarian for a long time. Initially, it was because I was an animal rights activist. I'm content in not consuming any meat or fish or any animal byproducts. However, what is the take in Buddhism? Is consuming meat actually gonna lead to accumulation of bad karma? Example, if someone is buying some meat from a shop, she may feel that they are not in any way responsible for the slaughter of that animal. But if they routinely buying from that vendor is an indirect way is which they are contributing towards the slaughter. Isn't that so? Much veneration, Thiruvan Saranai.
So it's how you argue in a way. So if you are more into the ahimsa, you like to promote the non-harming, you like to promote that giving up non-harming, abedana and all sorts of things. So I mean, it's good to have that attitude. So you are not promoting eating meat and all these things because indirectly you are supporting. And you think like that. But Buddha actually has taken a kind of a middle path where he has mentioned to monks, so if you know very well, it is because of you that animal being killed. Assume that you are invited to lunch and the owners have slaughtered an animal thinking, okay, I am now going to offer dana using this meat. Then it is quite sure it's being killed to offer to this monk. So then Buddha mentioned, okay, it is not appropriate to eat. But on the other hand, assume that you are randomly going in a walk, the morning pindapatha, arms round, and you didn't, I mean, the owners never know, I mean, they didn't know that you are coming. But they have prepared some meat, and now they are offering it to you. Then, I mean, you can simply accept it. So therefore, it's a very much like a little open kind of democratic kind of approach Buddha has taken rather than taking a very strict approach. And therefore, even the Sangha has accepted sometimes meat. And even they have shared with the Buddha. And there's a very beautiful story, Venerable Utpalavanna. Utpalavanna is the one, you know, the foremost in the female disciples with psychic powers. And once she received some meat and she felt, okay, this is a very good meat. Rather than I eat it myself, I better share it with the Buddha. And she, through the sky, she carries it to the Buddha and shares with the Sangha. So likewise, so it's just a food. So it's already killed. I mean, it is not for you. So it's a Vedda fellow who, I mean, you know, the bandit. So he was carrying it and he saw Venerable Utpalavanna and he has nothing to offer. He only had the meat to offer. So as a donation, he offered that to her. So at that time, if she refused it, it's not nice, isn't it? I mean, he's offering what he has. So she accepted it. She very well know, okay, it is not killed for me. And this is what this fellow is having. So she accepted it. Rather than eating by herself, so she wants even to share with the Sangha. So it's very much like a more practical, humane level that Buddha has taken, rather than strictly telling, okay, you shouldn't eat meat at all. So that is what actually Devadatta asked. Devadatta wants to strictly follow this kind of vegetarianism. Monks should never eat meat. Buddha said no. I mean, then you can't survive in the Western countries in today's point of view, right? So likewise, I mean, we have to take it little carefully. So rather than taking a strong point here, depending on the situation, if you very well know, okay, the animal is slaughtered for you, just to offer to you, then it is better avoid it. Otherwise, if you are randomly receiving it, there is no any restriction given by the Buddha. Yeah.
Number 5, Most Venerable Bhante, most of my work colleagues are non-Buddhists. Often they question me the behavior and the role played by abhikkhus in politics and in current issues on the uprise of general public. I am not seeking your opinion on it, but appreciate very much if you can quotes examples from suttas where this kind of behavior is dealt with so that we can refer those by ourselves to understand the present day issues. With my little knowledge, I have heard that the lay people were asked to refrain from engaging in Rajakatha, Chorakatha, etc.
Yeah, I mean, it's not for lay people, I mean, more to the monks. Buddha advised not to get involved with Rajakatha, Chorakatha, etc., etc., so many katha. So, but what today we do is that. Less in appiccha katha, santutti katha, viriyarambha katha. So nobody talks about that. But every day we are talking about politics and this and that and all blah blah things. What to do? So basically, this in a way we need to understand it's a kind of a decline of the sasana. So we have put into wrong priorities. We have given wrong priorities. So the culture, nationality, these things have come more closer to the monk's life. So monks consider their responsibility is to protect the country, to protect the nationality, to protect the religion, all sorts of things. And then they go to politics to do it properly and ultimately get blamed. But during the Buddha's time, actually, Buddha didn't intervene in a way. When King Vidudaba going to kill the whole Sakyans, Buddha tried to stop it because his clan is going to abolish by the king. He tried twice, and later Buddha understood it cannot be stopped. Then Buddha given up. Then the King Vidudaba assassinated the whole Sakyan clan. So I mean, that is the dirty side of the humanity. I mean, the human beings are that kind of histories with us. So therefore, human realm is not purely good. So we have both. We ourselves have both. So we may have done something good and we may have done something bad as well. So that is how the human realm is. And we continue to do the same thing. I mean, we are doing something good, we are doing something bad. We continue to do. And we accumulate karma. And continue to live in the samsara. So therefore Buddha teaches us, okay, you have come long. If it is enough for you now, the path is open to get out of it. Get out of the cycle. If you don't, you can continue. You can involve politics, you can do a lot of other things. You can be in the samsara, enjoying samsara. Choice is yours. So, but Buddha has done his job. That's what we need to understand. The Buddha as a teacher, he has done his part perfectly. It's up to us. It is our own ignorance that we behave wrongly. It is not the problem of the teacher. It is the problem of the student that the students don't understand the teacher's teaching, what the teacher has mentioned, what teacher has expected. So when monks are getting ordained, there's a very beautiful statement that we have to mention. Sabba dukkha nissarana nibbana sacci karanattaya. Imam kasavang gahetva pabba jeta mambanti anukampang upadaya. Sabba dukkha nissarana. Nibbana sacci karanattaya. Sabba dukkha nissarana. Just to relinquish from all the suffering and to realize Nibbana. By accepting this yellow cloth, please ordain me out of compassion, out of sympathy. So this is how all the monks and nuns get ordained. So this is a kind of a formula that we have to recite in front of the preceptor who is offering us the monkhood. But after some time we forget it. Why we get ordained? We forget. So, I mean, it's a decline of sasana, so we have to, that's why, I mean, we can't completely change the whole system. It's deteriorating. And even during the Buddha's time, people have done wrong things. Monks have done wrong things. It's not only in this period. So there are many things now. Say for example, Devadatta. So he went to the king Ajasattha and he intervened the process and he persuaded King Ajasattha to kill the King Bimbisara. So many things. Politics, isn't it? Politics. And some others, say in the Kosambia, certain monks. So they were thinking of their comfort. They were accumulating certain even drinks, you know, alcohol. They interpreted the precepts like it's enough, it's all right to have it, and to store some salt with them. So in case you guys didn't put enough salt, so I am free to add some salt. So likewise, they have they have changed the Vinaya. Then the second council has come, Sanghayana has come, abolishing all those wrong interpretation. So likewise, so this is how human beings are operating. So what to do? Yes.
Venerable Bhante, yesterday you have explained during Q&A how we should behave and react during an uncertain situation we all are faced with due to current economic situation. Can I please know when the Q&A session will be uploaded to NV website?
Yes. It will be uploaded after we finish it, maybe a couple of days after tomorrow, it may be available. If you refer an Nesanwani website, you need to go to Dhamma Talks. There are English Dhamma Talks. There you have some outside Dhamma Talks because we have the Saravane related, the retreats that we conduct internally, and then the overseas retreats, and again the outside places like here, Kalalgoda. So you got to refer there. Not that difficult. You can little cautiously look at it, then it's available. Yeah. That's all. Okay, that's all the written questions we have. So no other questions. Yeah, you have?
But this is regarding yesterday, Dhamma sermon. So you asked us to match the Paticchasamuppada in every experience.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not kind of a compulsory thing that we always should apply Paticchasamuppada to every experience, but if you are able to apply it, you get more wisdom. You may understand, okay, this is how it has happened. So I should not behave like this. The way the suffering being accumulated or being experienced, rather you become minimizing the sufferings. So therefore, applying that as much as possible is helpful.
Yeah. For example, I'm watching TV, right? Then I see the ignorance is like some wave we consider as people. Mm. Is that the ignorance?
Yeah, that is also. Because basically I still consider me and not me. I mean, here me, I am here and you are there. So that very understanding is kind of a personality view. So I am attributing a person to this five khandhas, and I am attributing a person to these five khandhas as well. So always having a kind of a persons, individuals. So we can refer, by the way, I mean me, you, like that we can simply use for communication. But knowing I am using it merely for communication, but there is no such rigid, solid me, myself, you, yourself. There is no such thing. We are referring it for the sake of easy communication. If we are using it with such understanding, then that is great.
So that also ignorance, no? We are taking these pictures as people we consider, no, when we watch TV?
Yes.
So then it comes...
The other thing, the other beautiful thing is, now you are looking at the TV. TV doesn't have any people, no?
only a wave or something.
But we get immediately angry.
Yeah,
so we immediately see a peace person there inside the TV.
When you said that, I remember I went to watch some 3D movie long ago, 5 years back.
Yeah.
And it comes not to your face. Mm. Then you see it's nearly the beam of light.
Exactly.
And when it hits the screen, it becomes people.
People.
So I was watching that, how these beams become people when it hits the screen. Yeah, yeah. Like.
So, I mean, we can do it only when our mind is ignorant. So assume that you are constantly remembering the mind, telling the mind, don't get deluded. This is the TV. This is a light beam. This is a light beam. Then it can't get deluded. You can't enjoy the movie. Definitely, you can't enjoy the movie. If you really want to enjoy the movie, then you have to allow the mind to get deluded. Through delusion, you get enjoyed.
Then the sankhava comes. Then when we see the picture, vedana, sanya, everything, and then knowing all these things as vinyana. Is it okay?
Yeah.
Right. Then vinyana paccha nama rupa. That thing I can't understand.
Yeah. Now we can use the same simile here. Now say we are talking about a theater. Assume that kind of a projector is there, using which there's a kind of a light being projected to a screen, white screen. Suppose it's pitch dark, no light at all, it's completely dark. Now, can you see the screen? You can't see, okay? Now, when the light beams are projected to the screen, you can see the screen as well, and you can see the lights as well, but now, that is a kind of a background understanding. What we typically see are people dancing and all these different things, the movie. So that is the ignorance in a way. So on the other hand, we can argue like, so this, the light beams, whatever the images projected onto the screen are helping the screen to also become visualized. The presence of screen is possible only when the light beams are being projected. So therefore, they are interdependent. And the light beams to give kind of a life, represent kind of an actor, represent kind of a story, you need to have a screen as well. So therefore, both are necessary. So similar action happens in our mind also. So, whenever assume that there's a kind of a mental image. So, a mental image to appear present, then kind of a reflection is available. So, this reflection, this screen is what we call as the consciousness. So, the presence of consciousness is only possible when an image is available. Assume that there is no image at all, then you don't feel the availability of consciousness even. So this, what we are calling here is the conditioned consciousness is always therefore dependent on Namarupa. So when Namarupa is available, so the consciousness get entangled with it. Yeah. Yeah. So when the consciousness is available, name and form get entangled with this. So without name and form, consciousness is not visible. Consciousness function is not available. So its presence is not evident. So the function of the consciousness in that sense is to facilitate this process. So name and form therefore considered as a cause for the consciousness to come to its, I mean, to show its function, to come to the presence. Otherwise, if there is no name and form, the absence of name and form basically allows the consciousness to not to represent. It doesn't have anything to represent. That is why it is called as anidassana vijnana. It doesn't have anything. It doesn't indicate anything. It doesn't have any examples or rather any picture to show. Basically empty. By the way, there's another interesting phenomena. Does it mean that you are unconscious? It doesn't mean you are unconscious. You are fully conscious, but here the conditioned consciousness is not there, name and form is also not there, but the kind of a consciousness is there, but that is not the conditioned consciousness. So that name given for that kind of knowing is what we call as the anidassana vijnana, appatitita vijnana, where very much like unestablished consciousness or unmanifested consciousness. So that is what basically originally a mind has. So because of our ignorance, we do a lot of formations, we do a lot of constructions. And as a result of that, we start to think, imagine, say, mental images are being further constructed, evaluated, or added, subtracted, and all sort of preparations are there. Then these two fellows, name and form and the consciousness, become well established, very well working together. So that is how the whole process, the suffering, going to happen.
That little I understand, because of salayatana these things happens. So nama rupa paccaya salayatana the other way. So how it?
No, actually internal, at the beginning it may happen in your mind. Say for example, you want to, like yesterday we have taken, suppose now you are a little tired and you want to have a tea. So at first you get a kind of a desire for that and you get a little mental image of that. So maybe a beautiful tea and tasty tea, and you are adding this and that. And so likewise, mind prepares yourself for that. So the desire being slowly aggravated, immediately what you get is a little feeling, okay, it's better to have kind of a thought. And with that you get a nice image, maybe also. Tea is not a big thing. I mean, you can take a rough example if you want. So, just for explanation, so you get this kind of a mental image also, and we immediately recognize it as, this is a tea, I want to have it, and it's a very beautiful, or I mean, very tasty, blah, 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 blah. So we are adding, we are more and more, adding more importance to that. So that, now you can't stop, now you get up. Now you want to get up from the seat. Now, it's no more name and form, now it has come to the body. Now, even the imagining part is not merely name and form. It's what you call the manayatana. I mean, the name and form is the very primary level imagination. Very primary level image, we can say, kind of a mental image. But later, more you add it, more you think about it, more you proliferate about it. So that is the function of the manayatana. And after being activated or aggravated by that, now you want to get up. Now the body is involved. And now you are using your eyes towards the cafeteria. And you are guiding yourself. And you hear others are also preparing tea. Now you get some taste coming to your mouth. Watering. So that is also now happening. And now you are going there and you select the tea, you select the water. And now you are using your hands, pouring tea and all sorts of things. And ultimately you drink it. So all the six senses are now full in activation. So the very early stage is the nama rupa, and it conditioned the full functionality of all these six senses. Yeah.
So I heard some Deshana, last birth, previous birth, avijna, caused to sankhava and vijnana, that because of that vijnana we get this birth. And then in the womb, the nama rupa salayatana. In again, this life will start the same circle. And up to salayatana, you can't change anything. This is vipaka from previous birth. And you can change only after the salayatana.
No, actually, thing is, this is another interpretation. Actually, this whole cycle, avijja paccaya sankhara, sankhara paccaya vijnana, so that principle, that process, dependent origination, is applicable to whatever the incident ignorantly we do, as we discussed right now. Okay, even to such incident, we can apply this theory.
Yeah, momentary.
Momentary. No. Also, we can apply. But on the other hand, if you are considering the whole rebirth process, there also you can apply the same kind of a process. So, therefore, from the past life to this life, how this rebirth has happened, probably you can explain using this continuation of the process. So, therefore, but limiting it only to three lives is not getting the real essence of the teaching. Because this teaching is something very, very, very useful in terms of the vipassana, and to understand especially that principle, this causes that, and with the arising of this, that arises. So that is the main principle that we need to understand. By putting it to three lives, it's very difficult to understand. But when you are applying the theory to our present moment experience, some deluded experience, then it is quite evident how it has have happened, and you can even understand the principle. And actually today I hope to touch that part in the Dhamma sermon. Ultimately, as we are more and more understand this, all these links start to break, start to fade away. So ultimately the cycle start to very much like nullified. So you can't do it simply by explaining using three lives and telling, okay, you can only change the salayatana and blah blah things. Because ultimately the avijja has to vanish.
Yeah.
Then in, according to that
even
principle,
salayatana
then
start again from avijja, no?
Yeah, that's the thing. So, I mean, so if you are able to understand the causation between the sankhara and vijnana, or avijja and sankhara, so that means you have come very refined level of understanding, and ultimately that whole cycle may cancelled out. So therefore, I mean, if you strictly speaking about the Buddha's teaching, Buddha didn't mention that kind of a area that you can only know up to this part, only I can know that part. There is no like that. So Buddha has opened the teaching and he explained that with simple terms so that we can also can understand and try to apply it to our own experiences and to recognize how we have contributed to that, get caught to that, so that ultimately we are not being caught. Yeah. Okay, I think we have spent a little bit more than 1 hour. I think today also we have to conduct the sermon at 5 p.m., right? Because today also power cut till 5 p.m. So we'll come here and start the sermon at 5 p.m. Okay. Teruvan Sannai.